Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life Radio Show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, and certified coach, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and well-being in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Welcome, everyone, to the Power Your Life radio show, and I'm Dr. Joanne White, and I hope all of you are getting ready for your wonderful celebrations, for your holiday, whatever that is, in the new year. And what a wonderful way to bring in that holiday cheer, to talk about two wonderfully talented people who really are working with children, helping children, reaching out to children in so many different ways. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. For those of you who know me, you also know that I'm very much involved in an anti-bullying campaign with a nonprofit and with a campaign called Listen to Our Voices. So keep posted, particularly on my website at Joanne at, well, drjoannewhite.com, drjoannewhite.com, and you'll find some events coming up in the spring and the fall that are really going to help children who have been bullied and also help parents and community people work with children who've been bullied and also work at preventing that. So we're going to talk about children in need and also children that just time to give back to children. And it's always time to give back to children, but as I said earlier, it's a great time because it's around the holiday season. And my first guest is someone who does just that in a wonderful way with his wife, and his name is Paul Gilbertson, and he co-founded an organization with his wife called REACH. And we're going to talk about that, Reach a Child. And so Paul is both an entrepreneur, a children's book author, and he'll talk about his book, a speaker and the co-founder and CEO, as I said, of Reach a Child. Reach a Child's goal is to put smiles on the faces of children in crisis all across America through the power of books. And he's also the author of a children's book called Kind Hearted Pig. What a better way to help children through reading, children who are in trouble, because oftentimes books and stories help children move out of their troubling situation and into another world, and it also can help them with literacy. So without further ado, Paul, I know you're on the line. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Good morning to everybody.
Great, that's wonderful. Now, let's talk a little bit about your Reach a Child, because I know you're in Wisconsin, and I know it started from a particular situation. You wanted to help children in crisis, and then lo and behold, something happened that allowed that to take place. So would you share the story with our listeners?
I'd be more than happy to, Joanne. It really all began... The whole idea of even me writing a children's book, or even thought I even had the talent to write a children's book, it began in 1999, and I was motivated by my two youngest kids who were sitting around on a Saturday morning watching a Beavis and Butthead cartoon on TV, and I took the two of them aside, and I said, there's got to be something better than a Beavis and Butthead. What would you like to hold in the palm of your hand that would make you feel good? Well, one of them said a teddy bear. And I said, okay. And the other one said, an angel. I said, well, that sounds great. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take the wings and a halo off the angel, put them on the teddy bear, and I'll write this story about this adventures of the teddy bear with wings and a halo. So I really went off the deep end. At that time in my life, I owned a building company. I was building homes, and I took about 6 months off and wrote 20 children's stories all about these different animals with wings and a halo and all the rescuers and all these different adventures and all these stories. And I ended up having the first one published back in 2000. It was a kind-hearted pig with wings and a halo. And it's about sibling rivalry and how the adventures of children at a young age and the envy and jealousy amongst kids sometimes about their peers. And it was a fun, a heartwarming story. And actually, it sold in all the Walgreens stores in Wisconsin and all those Precious Moment, those Gold Crown stores. And I thought, great, maybe I'll become this famous children's book author. But then I realized how much work there is to that. There's traveling all over the country and doing book signing, finding agents, and just never being around and never being home. And at the time, my four children, four kids, and they were all probably grade school and younger. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll do that some other point in my life. So in the meantime, Joanne, my building company took off like a bottle rocket. We ended up merging with another company, and we were during the early 2000s when the real estate market was just storming. We started off in building huge condominium projects. And next thing you knew, a couple of years went by, and it just took up all my time. We were one of the top 50 building companies in the world at its peak in about 2006. And as everyone knows who's involved in real estate, the whole bubble burst, and they always say we were the ones that popped the bubble back in those days. And I looked at myself in the mirror in 2007. I said, Paul, you've had a great life. What do you want to do the rest of your life? And I thought, why not get back into children's book writing? And we flew out to New York, my wife and I, for a convention of authors and illustrators and to attend the Book Expo of America, which was at the Javits Center. And, of course, while we were in New York thinking, well, let's get the book ideas back and start doing that whole thing, and this would be a second career. We were inspired at the time with a tour we took of Ground Zero, where there was one wall in that facility. Yeah, there was one wall that had crayon drawings that children had done that had lost a loved one in that event. And I was thinking, as we looked at all these little crayon drawings, my wife and I looked at each other and go, look at these kids traumatized the rest of their lives from that one single event. And there must have been hundreds of pictures on that wall. And
you know,
of course,
I've
the
seen
next
the wall.
Day,
I've seen, yeah, it was very, very moving. So go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it brought you to tears if you sit and look at every picture. You think every child has their story. And of course, the next day, we're going to the Javits Center in New York, the biggest book expo in the world. It was at that point in time I looked around at all those different, there were 1,500 booths, and I'm thinking, what do all of them do with their leftover kids' books? And why doesn't someone give a children's book to a child in the midst of a traumatic situation to help them shift their focus to something positive? And that's really where the whole idea started.
You know, it's such a great idea, too, because oftentimes when people, well, particularly when children are in crisis, they don't know who to turn to, and sometimes they need some solace, sometimes they need some comfort. And I know when I was a child, I had a great amount of comfort through reading and through books. And so I think it's a fantastic idea, and I think it's really flourished from that time for you and your wife to really create this wonderful organization. And I guess what I'd like to know is, because oftentimes what happens is the books that you give are books to people like policemen or whatever who are the first people that are on the scene at a particular crisis, whether it's a fire or something's going on with their parents. And what are some of the results or some of the rewards that you see immediately with children? Because you've been doing this now since, 2007. So you have some history with the success of the program.
Oh, we certainly do. And, you know, we get emails oftentimes from officers telling us a story that happened to them out in the field. And there was one story I tell to everyone that I talk to about this program because it is the core of what we're doing. It hits you right in the heart. And it was one of those, not an email, but my wife and I were heading up to watch our daughter play soccer, and she plays for a college team. And we stopped to get gas, and right alongside him, he parked a state trooper vehicle. So I went over and tapped on his window, and he rolls it down, and I said, excuse me, officer, do you know Captain Teasdale? He's a friend of mine who helped start a program where we give you guys backpacks filled with children's books. He steps out of his squad, and he asks me, how do you want to know that captain? I said, he's a friend of mine, and apparently he was a state trooper's boss. And I asked him point blank, I said, do you have a backpack of children's books in your squad? Because I knew we had launched that program with them about 8 months before. And he looks at me and he goes, you know what, I'm all out of books, but do I have a story for you? Well, here's the story he told me. He said, the last Christmas day, I was called to the scene of a rollover of an F-150 extended cab pickup truck. There were four occupants in the vehicle. There was a mother driving, a husband in the front seat, a grandmother in the back extended cab part, and a granddaughter in the back behind the mother. He said it was a snowy, wintry day. The winds were blowing, whipping across the interstate that was glazed over. And when he got closer to the scene of the accident, he could notice that the truck had somersaulted several times. He parked his squad car alongside of the road, and he walked over toward the accident scene, and he noticed that the grandmother had been expelled from the vehicle and died right on sight. You can imagine this. He looked over to his left, saw this little girl standing in shock and speechless in a snowbank. Then he went back to his squad car, grabbed the backpack of children's books, walked over to that little girl, knelt down next to her, opened up the backpack of books, and looked her in the eye and said, would you like a children's book? He said it changed her entire being. He said she reached into the backpack, pulled out some of the books and looked at them, looked at the officer and said, you mind if I take some of these with me on the ambulance? I'm going to the hospital with my mom and dad. This big state trooper looks at me, and I can see a tear rolling down his cheek, and he says, I bet this is what you're hoping this program was going to do, isn't it? I'm just standing there, I'm trembling, and I'm going, this is exactly what I want this program to do. And I'm looking over at my car, being gassed up, and my wife's in there kind of waving me to come over, let's get going. She's anxious. She has no idea the conversation I'm having with this guy. And so I say to this officer, can you do me a favor, write that story? Can you email me that story? That's an amazing story. He looks at me in the eye, and he says, no, I can't. It makes the hair in the back of my neck stand up just telling you that story.
Wow. You know, as you tell it now, I'm getting teary-eyed, too, because it's so incredibly moving. And that little girl, what must have been so traumatized, firstly, by the vehicle, but then watching her grandmother get ejected from the vehicle and die. That must have been just heart-wrenching. And like you said,
Imagine what had all gone through her mind. And, you know, the thing that story hit me at that moment and inspires me to this day to keep doing what we're doing because of the difference it makes, not only in the lives of children, but in the lives of those officers. I mean, that officer, they get into the police business, first responder business, emergency room settings, because they want to help people and make a difference. And, you know, this is just one tool, an avenue that can open that door and make that happen for those guys. I tell you, I have a lot of admiration as I've gotten involved with this program. When I first had the idea, my wife and I were just saying, it would be a nice idea to shift kids' focus, something positive. I didn't realize the whole eat-down literacy component of all we're doing, too, and how... There have been studies already done on our program comparing it to post-traumatic stress disorder of a soldier in Iraq digesting the similar information as a child 7 years old at the scene of an accident and how they respond to that and how they carry that with them and how they digest that information.
Post-traumatic stress, I'll say victims, that they carry that with them for many, many years and sometimes for the rest of their life. So what you're doing is maybe even helping to shorten or lessen that post-traumatic stress impact, which is so very, very valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what the study indicated. It said, you know, that with our intervention at that point in a critical moment, if you're one of the first responders shifting their focus to something positive, that will have life-changing implications. And not only does it reflect a positive image for the first responders in law enforcement, but it helps that child focus on something positive that came out of a negative situation.
Right.
And already, which says, what's that?
I said, and which is so very, very important, that the value of that is just priceless.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, what surprises me and I'm thrilled with is the fact that the law enforcement community is now calling our program the fastest growing crime prevention program in the country. because it gives an officer an opportunity.
But why are they calling it a? My question is, why are they calling it a crime prevention program?
Well, that's what I said too when I first heard that. I said, "What are you talking about, crime prevention?" So, yes, Paul, when you have an opportunity for an officer to engage a child in a crisis moment in their lives, establish a positive relationship with that authority figure and that child at a moment that they'll never forget, and turning that negative into a positive, that is crime prevention. Because it's all about, as you look at it, it's all about relationship building. If you start to build a relationship with an authority figure in a positive situation, you will carry that memory with you the rest of your life. He says to me, in 10 years, these kids are going to be 16, 17, and 18, either running from the law or embracing it, all based upon their past experiences with law enforcement.
So that interaction that they had with a police officer, which is so very important. But not only that, as you're talking, I'm also thinking, Paul, that not only the interaction that can really prevent crime, but also the fact that during a very difficult situation, they were given something that could be cherished, something that could lessen, like you talked about earlier, the trauma, which may make them less embittered, less angry, so that they don't grow up to be 17, 18, 19 and want to be in hurtful situations. And
right.
So I think it's marvelous. So tell us a little bit more about how this program can grow and what people can do, what our listeners can do, and anybody who's paying attention, what can they can do to really help grow the Reach a Child program and help support you?
I'm glad you asked that question, because that's what we're trying to do at this point. Right now, we have already, in our past, we're going to be 5 years old in 2012. In the past 4.5 years, we have already given away over 300,000 children's books to kids in crisis situations. And it just started out with an idea. Now what we're trying to do, we have a warehouse in Madison, Wisconsin, filled with over 400,000 children's books, and I could easily just ship them out all over the country to all the different police departments, emergency rooms, first responder vehicles. But in 6 months, the program would be over when their last book is given away. So what we're trying to do is find in each community that we expand into someone, some group, some charity group, some social service club, some Kiwanis, Rotary Lions, Optimist group, whatever, that says, hey, Paul, I like what you're doing. We'll help support the program. We'll help sustain the program. Because what we do, we charge $500 a year for unlimited books for a police department, fire department, first responder. We are now into emergency rooms at hospitals. We're at the district attorney's offices giving books to kids, and we're also just launched a program in the jails and prisons giving books to kids that come in to visit their incarcerated moms and dads. Because, you know, as I'm in this arena now 24/7, people are tugging at me in every different direction saying, Paul, you should be giving books to kids over here, over there. I said, well, hey, that's all fine and dandy. Let's find the funding. Let's find someone to help sustain it, to help support it, to help continue the program.
Are these books donated to you? I said, how do you get these books? Are they donated from different organizations or what?
That is correct. What we ask, we get donations from every possible outlet. Kids will do book drives for us. Schools will have publishing houses that give us some of their old, if they change a cover, for example, they'll give us all the leftover books that they have. They may be brand spanking new books, never been opened. And we have been very fortunate and blessed to have partnered with a number of different big publishing houses that they'll ship us books if I just pay for the shipping. So books have not been the problem since we've begun the program. The problem is trying to identify a supporter, a sponsor, someone in each community that says, hey, I'd like it here. I want to help this program thrive here. And what we ask them to do is three things in the course of a year. One is to communicate with their local first responders, police, sheriff, state patrol, ERs, district attorneys, and jail and prison programs, and find out a person at each of those places if they'd like to get involved with the program, first off. And once they say, sure, we would, and have us do a book drive 1 month a year to help us resupply when we launch a program, they'll be going through books like crazy. To give you an example, with our jail program, we just picked it off in Wisconsin in July, at 20 state penitentiaries, Since July, we have already given away over 12,000 children's books to kids that come into visit incarcerated moms and dads.
And you know,
isn't
that's
that
you know what's so important
that's
about
one...
that? Right. You know what's so important about that? Because you have people don't really think about the children that are coming in, as you said, to visit their incarcerated mothers or fathers. They don't really think that impact of walking through that jail, going through that whole process. And so what your organization is doing is so valuable, and I'm so glad that you did reach out to jails and prisons for kids, because I think that's so very important. And it's a population that's oftentimes just disregarded.
Oh, you've got it, exactly. Those are the kids falling through the cracks. What drew me into that program, I have a friend who's a jail administrator. He said to me, Paul, we should be giving books to kids in our jailhouse. I said, well, okay, let's do it. And as he talked to me, he said, did you know 70% of all inmates in America, in jails and prisons, are either illiterate or have less than a third grade reading level? And that their children are 6 times more likely to become incarcerated as adults than the kid next door. I'm thinking, wow, let's help those kids. They're falling through the cracks. Let's change that statistic to maybe 2 times more likely or not even more likely. And it was amazing. We were on an interview with a radio show in Minneapolis. Actually, there's a cable network. And he told me that morning, you know what, Paul, I did a count of how many inmates we have in our jail today. It's 26. 4 of them, a father, 2 sons, and a daughter.
From the same family you're talking?
From the same family. And I'm thinking apples don't fall far from the tree. You know, and if we don't do something to change the cycle of illiteracy, those kids have no chance. You know, so what we're trying to do, encourage kids to start reading. We had an email I got, my first one back from a jail deputy. He said, Paul, I just wanted to tell you this story because I want to show you the impact that this program is already having in our jails. The other day, we distributed children's books in the visiting room. And as I was taking the inmate back to his cell, he stopped me in the hallway and he thanked me for bringing those books for his kids. And he went on to tell me that all his life he had been illiterate, never could read, and was always embarrassed by it. And just recently, he started taking the Department of Correction reading program, and tonight was the first night in his life that he was able to read a book to his kids.
Wow, and you provided the book, so that's so, so wonderful.
And I'm just amazed, you know, and that's not an isolated situation. That is the standard of the jail and prison program. There are just so many people illiterate. And if you can't read, you can't write, you can't get a good job, you're going to try and provide for your family any way you can. And so what we're trying to instill in the children of those inmates is they can change their stars in their life. And that's all through the establishing a foundation of literacy. You can start the
I love that. I love that phrase, a foundation of literacy. Now, we only have another minute or so. So can you tell people how they can reach you, how they can get involved to help reach a child grow all across America? Because it's so very, very important.
Sure can. Just visit our website, that's reachachild.org, and just click on the contact us and we will get right back to you. We'll let you know what you can do and where you're at and how it works. To give you another finishing story here, we launched a program in Lake Placid, Florida about 3 months ago. And when they were interviewed for a little newspaper story, one of the officers said, to the gal doing the story, she said, you know, the most important tool in my vehicle is that backpack of children's books, because it allows me an opportunity to talk to kids and get down to their level and let them know that we're not the bad guys. You know, so often I think police are viewed as, oh, run from the police, oh, here comes the cops, take off, you know. And it's neat to see this guy also commented that he goes into grocery stores now and kids will come up and go, hey, do you have any more children's books? And I'm thinking, isn't that great establishing that kind of rapport, you know, especially with at-risk kids in neighborhoods that most times Mobile is afraid to drive into those neighborhoods. And so it's so cool to see the impact that this program's having. But if anyone wants to get involved, anyone's hearing what we're talking about, we'd love to have you join us and get on board with us and become part of our team, because we have so many different avenues that we're expanding into. And we need all the help that we can get, Joanne.
Now, Paul, your book, Kind Hearted Pig, is that one of the books that's in that program?
Actually, that book is, we use that as a way to raise funding. That one is not in the backpacks, actually. And we have another series of books coming out behind that one. We're hoping to launch one each year as, of course, funding becomes available for us. And with a donation, any one of your listeners today that they're listening, if they want to email me at paul.gilbertson@reachachild.org, I'll send them a free Kind-Hearted Pig book, no strings attached, just to get them aware of our program and what we're doing and what we're up to, because inside the front cover and the back cover tells a little story about the Reach a Child program.
You know, Paul, what you and your wife are doing, as I said earlier, is so, so very valuable. And what is there a parting word or that you can tell people across America that can help them get more involved? I mean, I know we've talked about the importance of it, but just what else?
What I'd like to see in answer to that question, Joanne, is just if everyone listening, if everyone that knew somebody that did just one little thing to help our program expand, and I don't care if it's holding a book drive or if you're a member of a service club somewhere, if you're doing regular fundraisings, have another element of your fundraising where you're helping support Reach a Child, because we'd love to be in every community. Our 5-year goal is to be a national program. We're going to be 5 years old in 2012. We're only in 12 states right now. I want to be in all 50 states. Our 10-year goal is to be a global program. We have our work cut out for us. We're looking to partner with national corporations that see the big picture of what we're doing, like a Ford Motor Company, a Pepsi Cola, you know, any of those that spend millions of dollars every year advertising, just partner with us to help us get the word out of what we're doing, because we're making a difference.
And, you know, you are. And you're talking about really reaching an international audience of children in need. And as you know, well, I don't know all the statistics, but illiteracy is really a big concern all across the world. How can we grow countries? How can we build communities when people are deficient in reading and knowing how to do certain things like that? So your program, I love the idea, Paul, of getting it in other countries and also all across America, because, like I said, I think it's so very, very important. And it's wonderful that we figured out to do this program right around the holidays when people hopefully are into giving, and particularly to children, and maybe it'll spark that desire in people to give back and to reach you again. So tell us again your website and how they can get a hold of you.
Sure. It's just go to www.reachachild.org. Make sure you go to the .org, otherwise you'll get lost. There are other Reach programs out there, but they're not about our program. And also, if they'd like, they can email me. It's paul.gilbertson@reachachild.org, and I will send them a complimentary book. I'll even sign it for them if they tell me who they'd like it signed for, and hopefully we'll get it in time for Christmas yet this year. If they email me today or tomorrow, that'd be great. But that's about it, Joanne. If I can just employ people to get out there and keep us on their radar so they know that we exist and help us grow into their own communities, that'd be wonderful.
Well, Paul, thank you so much, and thank you so much for everything that you do for children and for their families all across the country. Many blessings to you and yours for a wonderful holiday and new year, and we'll definitely be in touch. You know I do a lot of fundraising, and so maybe that's something we can do in 2012.
Well, that would be wonderful, Joanne. And thanks for having me on today. This has been a privilege. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Take care, Paul. And in just a few moments, we're going to shift gears, but we're still moving into what it's like to work with children and to support children in music and with theater and with programs and shows. And so we're going to talk about that very, very soon. I believe my guest is here, and my next guest is Janet Scarloff, who's an award-winning recording artist, a playwright, a singer-songwriter, and a music and movement specialist. Her music enlightens, educates, and entertains, and she produced and starred in a TV pilot video and recorded two albums that won Best Album Award from the Kids Music Awards. And again, we're talking so much about how to give back to children, how to help children, and what a wonderful way to help children through the arts and to allow them to feel joy and to experience learning and pleasure and community through the arts. So, Janet, is that you? Hello? You're live. I guess that's not you.
Jan?
Hello, Janet?
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just did. Did you hear the introduction?
I did. I said, oh, I better call now.
That's a good idea, because you're on the air, and there are certain times where I'll do the program with or without you, so I'd rather do it with you, but here we are. You are a busy woman here. You do so much for children and enlighten their lives and lighten their load in so many different ways. So let's really talk about that. Firstly, and it's not just music that you do. You do music and you're writing for kids and produce plays. But how did you get involved in this as a career path?
It's interesting because I was listening to your last interview with Paul Gilbertson, and the way he came into it is similar to the way I came into it, that the head of the nursery school that my children went to called me. She knew that I played the guitar, and they had lost their music teacher. And she said, will you come in and try to do music and see how it goes? I said, sure. And I went in and just started to do old folk songs, you know, but I started asking the children what they liked, what they listened to, what song they wanted to sing. And I learned from the children and developed, you know, my music from asking them first.
You know,
and
I love that, because children are often our greatest teachers.
Yep. That is my full belief. And it's interesting because whenever I was with the kids, even when I do a show, the first thing I do is ask what they want to sing or if there's anyone who wants to talk on the microphone or sing a song. And there always is someone who wants to talk on the microphone, and there's always someone who has an idea for a song to sing.
Kids are very creative before it gets squashed out of them, so I think that's great that they're so willing and ready.
And the squashing thing is the thing that is like my passion about how much we get squashed generally in the school system. Generally, the way we're educated, it squashes creativity. And it's such an important thing, because there are so many people who say they're not creative. And in my mind, I think to myself, I wonder which teacher or which person said to them, it's not okay to be that way, or stop singing, don't just move your lips, or, you know, you don't have a good voice.
Right.
Whatever
stop
it is.
Writing, stop doing
writing, right.
Theater, right, anything. I remember, as you're talking, I just got to tell this story. I remember when I was in elementary school, we had an art teacher, and I'm sure if she's listening, I don't even remember her name, but she scarred so many children. They'd walk into the room, and she had a particular idea about how art should be. Now, these kids are like 9, 10 years old, and we're all walking in with all sorts of trepidation. And when people are drawing, she would actually, if she didn't like somebody's picture, Janet, she would pick up the paper and she would rip it up, and she would get red in the face and scream, I need it big and bold, she'd say, big and bold. And that child's creativity, like you're talking about, was probably so stifled. We were all so afraid of going in that classroom and creating anything for fear that it wouldn't meet up to whatever her particular standard was. Crazy. Mm, mm,
mm. And, you know, this is a thing. I do this thing called Little Tyke Open Mic in my shows. And I call the kids Little Tyke Open Mic.
Okay, go ahead.
And I say, is there anyone who, you know, wants to come up and sing a song? And I'm telling you, two-year-olds come up, three-year-olds, five-year-olds, people that are, you know, kids that stand up there and are so shy. First of all, there's ones that won't come up, and at the end, they're up. And but the whole thing that I focus on in myself is not to shame. You know, make sure there's no shaming while this child is up there. You know, that they just, whatever they do, I smile and they're good and they just keep going. And I, so, you know, I'll encourage them if they're like really scared. And it's the most empowering thing. You know,
you're right. They're taking such a great risk with you,
yep,
by standing up there. It's so courageous. And if you did what that art teacher did, they'd never do it again. So you
never
know why.
They would never do it again. And they wouldn't even know why. Right. They might not know why they don't do it again, but... Yeah, it's really one of the things that I'm involved in. I co-wrote a show called Skimmer and Budge with Andrea Green, and this is something that within it teaches about, one of the characters is a dragonfly, and she comes in and she gets stuck in a sap trap in a tree. And she gets hysterical, and it starts getting worse and worse, and she's more and more afraid. And the Budge, the caterpillar, like, teaches her to breathe.
Mm.
And when she breathes, she just slips right out of the sap trap. And so we have a song called Breathe, and there's, in every situation in life, especially crisis ones, if you breathe, you know, it relaxes your body. It lets you think. It does everything.
Right. You know, I work with many people, as you know, who, and oftentimes, like you said, you're so right. Particularly in crisis, people will hold their breath. They're not even realizing that they're holding their breath, but they're doing
right.
So. Out of apprehension or fear or whatever it is. And so I love that song. Now, this is a family musical that you're talking about. So it's geared for families and kids. And what else does it teach? Because I love the idea of this.
Well, Skimmer is very, you know, she's very nervous and very excited and very hyperactive, and she comes in and she goes, you know, gets stuck, and Budge helps her, and then she is so grateful she wants to help him, and the way that she decides to help him is to change him. How can you sit there? Don't you want to move? Don't you want to see the world? I mean, aren't you bored? Don't, you know, and it's about, you know, how often in life do people try to change us? Or do we try to change someone else?
99 point, right?
And he shows all the wonderful things about staying right where he is. You know, that right from here I can see so many things, the little things, the bigger things, you know. And she talks about the great big world out there. And so they learn from each other and they grow, and she tries to, you know, keeps doing more and more crazy things to try to get him to move. And he more and more stays in his, you know, not doing it thing.
And they
learn. And eventually they learn from each other, and they, I don't know if I should tell the.
No, don't tell. I don't want you to tell the ending, because I want people to really be able to access this. But let's shift gears, because I should have said to you, Janet, get your guitar. sing us a song. I didn't do that. Maybe your guitar is handy. Maybe you will do that. I don't know.
I actually thought of that. I also thought that it would be fun for us to do a total creative experience, like no agenda at all, and just start talking and see, which is kind of what we're doing.
Right, that's exactly what we're doing. But let's talk about your one of those albums that won the Best Album Award from the Kids Music Awards. And can you share one of those songs?
Sure.
Where's your guitar? Is it handy?
My guitar is downstairs.
I have it on my computer.
So we were talking about education and music. And one of my songs is, which is a famous song already, you know, it's called Tyrannosaurus Rex. And it teaches, it actually teaches kids to spell Tyrannosaurus. I don't know how many grown-ups can spell Tyrannosaurus.
Don't look at me.
But in education, you know, my belief is that you can, if everything was taught through music or through a beat, a rhythm that has to be memorized or understood, really, that people would learn a lot more easily.
you know, that's very, very true. And there's a lot of research, even a lot of recent information that totally supports that. They've done music with autistic children that's had very positive results. They've used
I worked in that community.
Right.
This Tyrannosaurus goes T-Y-R-A-N-N-O-S-A-U-R-U-S. Tyrannosaurus, Tyrannosaurus, Tyrannosaurus Rex. You know, and then it's this whole song.
I'm loving it. More, we want more.
I could sing one from Skimmer and Budge, which is so beautiful, but the Right From Here one that I talked about.
And, whatever you like, do a little bit of that, and then we'll go back to talking, because I think it's fun and I think people would enjoy that. And again, what we're sharing with parents and families is the value of music. It not only puts a smile on kids' faces, you and I are having a great time, but it gives joy and it teaches that learning can be fun, and that's ideal.
You know, when I was moving into music, deciding that music would be my path, I looked at all the different things that I did and all the arts, and I figured out that music is the one form, the one art form or form of expression that breaks through all barriers. Age, you know, age, sex, culture, race, religion, everything. Music is a medium that works for everyone. Every single person in the entire world likes some kind of music.
You know what? Even if they don't understand the words, the music can actually pull you in so many ways because of how it affects us emotionally and stirs our hearts. And so you're so right with that. And I remember
I would be curious to know if, like, you know, there's some songs that make you cry. Like the second you hear it, tones in it make you cry. I wonder if the same songs make everybody cry.
Well, that could
be a
research study.
The tones.
Right.
Anyway.
You know, it may be, because it may be that certain music really stirs and opens our hearts in a very, very different way.
It does.
Hard to say.
It does.
So when did you start writing songs?
When I was 36 years old.
And what led you to just suddenly write a song? You were playing guitar music before then, right?
Yes, I was playing the guitar since eighth grade.
Right.
And I wrote poems. I wrote a lot of poetry, and they were rhyming poems, and had a real rhythm to them. But that's what I wrote. And I did invitations. I used to do like poems, you know, make up poems for invitations. And then I took a poetry course. I mean, I actually have a very funny, weird story about really what guided me towards writing more. But
as
I don't know.
As long as it's not X-rated, go ahead.
I was at a seance.
Go ahead.
And the lady, you know, was saying all kinds of things. And then she said, I see a man with a patch on his ear.
Hmm.
And I thought to myself, my grandfather had a patch on his ear. He wore a big surgical patch on his ear.
Right.
Now, how many people do you know that wear a patch on their ear?
Nobody.
Right. And so I didn't say anything because I thought, oh, well, maybe someone else knows someone with a patch on their ear. And then she said, it's on his left ear. And I raised my hand and I said, my grandfather wore a patch on his left ear. And she said, okay, well, he said you've written something and you haven't done anything with it and you should do something with it because it's going to be very successful. And he sends his love to you and da 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 da. And that was it. And I knew it was my grandfather. It had to be.
Right. Right.
And so I decided, well, if I've written something that's it's going to be successful, maybe I should just keep moving in writing, towards writing. And then I took a poetry course, and the teacher said to someone else, your poems sound like song lyrics. And I looked at mine, and I said, oh, mine do. And I found two people who wrote songs, songwriters, and I asked them how they did it. What did they do? What does it feel like? What's the process? And one of them said, you know, I take a tape recorder, I take a pencil and a paper, and I turn off the telephone for 2 days. Like, you plan that you're going to turn it off for the whole day. And I sat down on the stairs, and I had all that ready. I had a tape recorder and everything, and I turned off the phone, and within a half hour, millions of kinds of songs started coming up from me that I had no idea were there. There was never an inkling in my whole life that I had a song in me.
And not only
and
one.
Not only one, it was like they had been waiting.
Right.
You know, and I became convinced that anyone could write a song, but that the channel isn't open. They don't know it because there's a channel of something that gets opened up. With any art,
so,
you know, if you...
You're talking about like a creativity channel then. Right?
Like like something got open for me that I didn't know was in me. But it was already there, obviously, because it came so easily and so there were so many of them inside
right.
me. You know, there was, and some of them came out in one fell swoop. It's like, you know, people talk about this who are songwriters, that it's like you channel this whole thing. And then there's other times where it's work. You know, there's something you want to say and it's not coming right. And I started doing songwriting workshops because I believed that if everyone saw how to do it or what it is, they would have that in them. And so I started doing that.
So you're doing that for kids?
Yes. But I did it for singles groups.
Right.
I did it. We wrote a song together. And it is the most fun. And people get so engaged in it, and they don't know. They didn't know they could write a song, you know.
So
that's
what it
really
tells them
fun.
What it tells them is that they are creative, even if they didn't think they had that in them. So
right.
That's beautiful.
And they might not decide that they want to write songs, but there's going to be something else in them like that that's in there already and hasn't been being able to be expressed for some reason. You know, there's this part of me that thinks that, and I'm going to say something that like sounds religious, but it's not. It's just that the Bible, like the first couple words of the Bible is, he created, you know, God created.
Right.
And I think that when it says that humans are in the image of God, I think that it's the creation part of God. It's not that we look like the power. It's that this is the energy of creation is when we're being, you know, being what we're here to be. And I think if
right.
everybody was doing their creative expression, whatever it is, there wouldn't be wars. Everybody
right.
would be.
Right. They'd be creating something else, something beautiful. You know,
and
I
be involved
really
in that,
that
and be very happy. And,
right.
You know,
I really agree with that.
Do you have any kind of expression that's creative that you feel that you go into a zone? You probably with you.
Well, you know, I do a lot of books, so I do the same thing that that person suggested you do. I turn my phone off because I don't like interruptions.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, as you said, the words seem to flow as though it's being guided. And then sometimes, depending upon what it is, it may be more of a challenge to write. But that to me is a wonderfully creative process. And sometimes it feels like a puzzle trying to figure out, well, just how is this supposed to be? And then the answer comes. So it's very, very wonderful. Now, you were going to sing something or about from that new musical?
Okay, yes. Oh, and this musical is going to be, it's going to be at the Ritz in Oakland on Route 130.
And that's
between Westmont
and
Collinsville. That's in New Jersey.
Okay, good, because we have some listeners that are all over the country. So.
Okay, and it will be all over the country eventually.
Great.
And we're actually going to be creating a book for it, with it. So that's, I was also very interested in Paul's, you know, your interview with him.
Right. So when is this at the Ritz? Because we can actually send that out.
Right now, it's the second and third Saturday in June. It's the second,
in 2012.
You know, June, the second Saturday and the third Saturday at 10 and 1 right now. And if we sell out, then we'll make more, you know, create more. Because he has it in a smaller setting. It's 60 seats instead of using the whole theater. And
right.
So it's in a very intimate, you know, it will be perfect for this. So there is actually a chance we could sell out.
Well, that,
anyway,
I think that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So Budge, who's the caterpillar, is happy right where he is. And he sings... Let's see what happens. Right from here, I can see so many things. The little things, the bigger things, the shadows over there. The taller things, the smaller things, there's wonder everywhere. The blade of grass, that little bug, that sticky's pulling free. The grain of sand, the broken stem, just look and you will see. Right from here, I can think so many thoughts about the happy times, the sadder times, the things I learned today, the friend I saw, the food I ate, the things I like to play. What's really real? How do I feel? Let's sing and have some fun. The memories that fill my head, whoever needs to run. Right from here, right before my eyes, every day's a new surprise. And there's one more verse. Should I sing it?
Well, I love the song, but I want people to be able to get to your website and learn more about you. So let's save that for another time with the accompaniment of your guitar.
Was that good?
That was great. I loved
it. Sound okay?
Yeah. Sounded great.
Good.
All right. Hear my applause in the background?
Uh-huh.
All right. How do people get a hold of you? How do people find out more about your wonderful projects, your music, and all of the stuff that's coming up for you, Janet?
Okay. Well, I have a website, which is janetsklaroff.com.
You better spell it for people.
J-A-N-E-T. S as in Sam, C, L, A, R, O, and two F's like in Frank, F.
Now, when they go to
JanetSklaroff.com,
when they go to Sklaroff.com, when they go to the website, will they be able to hear tidbits or pieces of some of this stuff? Or what is
yes, on my website they will right now be able to hear, they will connect to cdbaby.com where my CDs are available, and they will be able to listen to all the songs on Sing Along with Janet and Janet's Planet. And then if you go to my Facebook, we have a Skimmer and Budge Facebook account, but I have one, you know, Janet Sklaroff, and then there's a Skimmer and Budge area where you can listen to the songs from Skimmer and Budge. We don't have a website for Skimmer and Budge yet, but that's coming.
Well, that's wonderful. So I have one more question. Actually, I have a host of questions, but I don't want us to run out of time here. How can people bring more music into their lives, and especially into the lives of their children? In a minute.
There are so many opportunities to listen in the car and put in CDs and have little gatherings where you do music, where you get rhythm things, and you know, you can do it, you can have music in your kitchen with your kitchen pots and pans and just make something fun. And just going to theater in the area, it's not that expensive, and it's like something that, these are the things we remember for our whole life, just like crises and traumas. There are also beautiful things you always remember when you went to a show when you were a little kid, or when you, there's certain songs that you sing as a family, or that you sing at camp, or that you sing, and that come back to you 100 years later, you can still remember all the words to a particular song, or, you know.
You know, that's so true. And music has an incredibly healing effect, just like those books that Paul was talking about, has an incredibly healing effect on children and can brighten their day. And I love the idea that parents can do that with their kids anywhere extemporaneously, and it's also helping them build creativity and building more family cohesion and togetherness.
And I also know that when a child is crying, when they're upset, if you put on music, I mean, teachers do this all the time, that it's put on music and it calms everything down. And it just, it's like has some kind of magical effect. And it's a beautiful gift.
It certainly is, and you brought a beautiful gift into my life today and hopefully into the lives of our listeners. And your music, Janet, is fantastic because it's going to do just that. It's going to be gifting people with healing, with fun, with learning, education, and so it encompasses so, so very much. It's been a pleasure, and you're a treasure. No, thank you so much. For, I do rhyming all the time like you. Thank you so much for being such a wonderful guest on the show. And folks, please visit Janet's website and go to the Facebook page and check out all the upcoming music and shows that she's offering to everyone.
Thank you
so much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Have a blessed holiday and a happy, happy new year.
Thank you, and you too.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Next week, folks, we're shifting gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about preparing people to perform with Janice Coleman, and to transform themselves with Tracy Booker. And these two distinguished women are going to help us, whether it's in business or personal life, move forward and access our goals and maximize our potential and our resources and be the best that we can be. So thank you all again for being on the show. I wish you all a wonderful holiday. Tune in next week when we'll be, actually not next week, because next week, yeah, it is. Next week is December 28th. Tune in next week with Tracy and with Janice, and have a wonderful holiday. Thank you for joining us.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with your host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the Upbeat Show to grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again by visiting divatoolbox.com and blogtalkradio.com. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.